This is The Topic is Trek, episode 55 for Friday, December 6th, 2019. Coming up in this episode, we're down to just one Chris. All one big happy family again. Time for stocking stuffers. All this and more right now on The Topic is Trek. I can't warp 55. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Engage with purpose. Oh, well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me are Mr. Craig Stepp.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. What's that?
You're
Hold on a second. Okay, the universal translator was messing up. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm doing great. How you doing?
Not as good as I thought I was, apparently. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
So you said I can't warp 55. Was Sammy Hagar on Voyager or something?
He was. And, you know, he stayed one of those kind of odd, you know, slug creatures that when it was all said and done.
He still is today.
Exactly.
Hey, actually, one of those little slug creatures are in the bottom of his tequila bottle.
Oh, my. Don't get into any of that bottle. Just leave it on the shelf. Yeah. Oh, and how has everyone been since last we chatted?
I'm full from the holidays and more to come.
Yes.
Yeah, my replicator was overflowing.
faux turkey again, huh? Oh, there we go.
I will try your replicated bird.
Yeah, I have one too many Tranyas and the replicated bird.
Well, as we are recording this, but before you are listening to it, because the other way around would be really amazing, you will already know that the CBS Viacom merger has finally happened. As of our recording, it will happen tomorrow, December 4th, but that's in the past as you're listening to this. So hopefully happy reunification, everyone. Yay!
Spock and Picard did it.
They did.
I think we're cheering for that, right?
I think so. I mean, nice to have all the family back together again, you know, which is good. And hopefully that will be more projects coming up for Star Trek. And just not at once. We have trouble keeping track of all this stuff. So, you know, pace yourself, guys. Just pace yourself.
Hey, wait a minute. Before we move on, I do have something to ask.
Okay.
How are you, Clinton?
I am doing just fine, although I'm operating on 4 hours sleep. Just things were going on, so if I start to doze off in the middle of the show, at least now you know why.
Like most of our listeners.
Yeah.
I'm with you, people. I'm with you. I try to be more relatable that way. Look at that.
Solidarity.
Well, to liven things up a bit, I think it's time we open up subspace chatter, and I know somebody who's really, really excited about it. Right, Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Take this, Charlie.
I'm going to push the buttons airlock in your general direction.
Is that the airlock?
All right, well, let's start off to keep Charlie interested, hopefully for once, with a story that broke right after we recorded last time. So thanks a lot, Internet. Do your investigative reporting a little bit faster next time around, please.
No kidding.
The big news is Star Trek IV is back on again. No, not the Quentin Tarantino film, although that still might be a thing. No, we're talking good old Kelvin timeline film starring Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and Carl Urban and Zoe Saldana and the rest. That's the Gilligan's Island version of that whole story. So according to a story that broke first on Deadline.com, Noah Hawley will both write and direct, not at the same time. He'll do the writing first, then he will direct it afterwards.
So Star Trek up.
4. Yeah, maybe you could do it that way. Kind of improv. Hawley is best known for adapting and being the primary writer for two critically acclaimed TV series, Fargo and Legion. But we have to remember that he also directed 2019's Lucy in the Sky. I don't think anybody remembers that movie because it bombed with both critics and moviegoers.
It happens.
He's and also Tribbles. Oh my goodness, the Tribbles didn't like it either.
Yeah.
I think the movie made, if I was looking at an article, I think the movie made $320,000 or something. And this is a movie that had Natalie Portman. I think that George Clooney was also in it, and I remember seeing trailers for it, and I don't remember it ever being in the theaters even.
I don't remember seeing the trailer for it.
They paid to keep it out.
Frawley is also an author with several novels, including Before the Fall, The Good Father, and Other People's Weddings. It's not known if Hawley will be using any of the story ideas previously drafted for Star Trek IV, but we do note that Chris Hemsworth was not mentioned in the story. So reuniting between James T. Kirk and his dad may have to wait a little bit longer.
Well, as I've stated before, I'm fine with that. I don't want that story.
Died. How can you have a reunion?
Time,
don't slingshot around the sun, please.
No, I don't want that. I look at it this way. His dad died. He kind of overcame it and moved on. And this is his progression away from that into becoming the captain that we know and love. And
dad's coming back as a force ghost.
Yeah. I don't want him
coming back as baby Yoda. It's very weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
So news of this impending Star Trek IV film comes almost 1 year after Paramount canceled plans for the Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth-led Star Trek IV that would have seen director S.J. Clarkson helming the film, and Clarkson would have been the first woman ever to direct a Star Trek film. Hmm. So that one is still hanging out there. It was kind of disappointing that we didn't get that, and I'm hoping now that if we set our sights on Star Trek V, we can make that happen, please. All right. So
they've already got a song. I mean, right. If Clarkson does this, you use the Monkees. Take the last film to Clarkson. And no. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you're just interested in talking about it. You may have it in here somewhere. I don't remember, but you know, there was speculation on who the villain is. And I don't know if you want to wait.
Let's wait on that.
It's especially Khan.
Especially since he just got announced. I don't even know if he's written anything yet. So I think that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the old one that was with Hemsworth and Pine.
No. This is a new one. There's a rumor of who the villain is.
We're beyond rumors, Craig. We don't do that anymore. Remember,
it's V'ger.
It's V'ger. Okay, you maybe can.
The whale probe comes back, and he's mad. No.
Well, if you're interested, you can go search out the articles. But there was some a story I read tonight, but it's not official or nothing. So we'll just pass on that.
Right. Well, we'll pass on that. But you do have a story to talk about, Craig.
I do.
You too.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. I scrolled too far down. And by the way,
story of my life.
Yeah. So would you like to have your car go from zero to hero? Well, check this out. Minivans have always been
Someone hitting the bourbon tonight.
I'm the one that's tired.
Maybe I should. Let's try that again. Minivans have always been a completely uncool, leave it. I can't even read it with the right inflection. Minivans has always been completely uncool. Leave it to Star Trek fans to see beyond the labels and instead see the infinite possibilities.
Ooh.
That's what Robert Strevers did when he took an ordinary Ford Aerostar van and Ford Aerostar? I thought it was Chevy. Anyway, an Aerostar van and turned it into a Star Trek The Next Generation style shuttle, specifically the Goddard. The van, which is currently owned by Corey Melvis, Block Store, not sure how that works in there, made an appearance at the 2014's Burning Man Festival and was has recently been receiving a lot of internet attention. You can go to the link in the article and see some pictures of it. I think there's even some video floating around that thing driving.
Yeah, that article has a link to it driving at night at Burning Man, so you get to see all the pretty lights on it.
It is street legal. It has a wiper and mirrors and lights. So the mirrors look really goofy, but you got to have them if you're going to drive this thing.
I think I've seen it online before this article somewhere. I've seen this picture before this.
The story it's from 2014. So I think this has been, but for some reason it's one of those things that the internet suddenly finds again or rediscovers and it just takes off. Yeah, there's one windshield wiper on the front, like it's the back window, and it's like right in the middle of the glass on the front of the thing. The lights look kind of tiny, though. They look like the size of a credit card. I don't know how practical that part is.
If they're LED, they'll be pretty bright,
I suppose.
Actually, in other news, I think Tesla just came out with one that looked like this.
Yes, exactly. Except, this one looks cooler than the Cybertruck.
Yes, I would agree.
I'd rather have one of these.
Slap some nacelles on that Cybertruck and we'll be in business.
Now we're talking. The best thing I saw about the Cybertruck is that Elon Musk posted a video of it hauling a Ford F-150 backwards up a hill. And Neil deGrasse Tyson replied to the tweet talking about, torque and how this and that. He says, but it's still kind of impressive. And then Elon Musk replies to that about, you're right, that and thinking, when you guys finish your nerd argument over there, we'll just get back to business. My goodness. Neil deGrasse Tyson, Elon Musk. That's a party you want to go to.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll invite Neil to any of my parties.
Sure.
Neil in his vest. And as Craig made allusion to, that we will have links to all the stories we talk about this evening over in the show notes for episode 55 over at The Topic is Trek. .com. But right now, we'll get out of the minivan and into the next story. Oh, that almost was a good segue.
I'm going to use a computer for this one. There we go.
Much better.
Black Friday has come and gone, but there's still time to get the perfect gift for that Star Trek fan on your list, even if that person is you. You know, that's called we gifting. If you buy something and it's allegedly for someone else, like, here, family, here's a TV.
What if you give yourself a Wii?
Then it'd be Wii gifting. Love the 14-year-old
Let's
humor
move
on. Okay. Yeah. Hey, we're not here to judge. We here at The Topic is Trek. .com want to help you spend your hard-earned gold-pressed Latinum on a few things of greater value than just mere t-shirts and baseball caps. Enter the audio clip of Avery Brooks going, "What's wrong with baseball caps?"
What's in your wallet?
Yes, it's time for our annual Star Trek gift guide, but this year we're going big.
Big,
I tell you. Auctioneer Profiles in History is conducting an auction that will feature items from the massive collection of John Azarian, not related to Hank Azaria. And sure, you could get a dress worn by Lucille Ball, not in my size, in an episode of I Love Lucy. Lucy has a connection to Star Trek, of course. Or perhaps Frank Gorshin's Riddler outfit from the Batman TV series. Frank played Beale on an episode of the original series. Was he black with white or white with black? I can't keep.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
But
I concur.
You want more, don't you? You do want more. You want more stuff. And we're here to help because the name of this show is The Topic is Trek. Oh, we got more. So here's something that will impress your friends and neighbors. You can own Kirk's wraparound tunic from TOS. It's on an auction for, just hold on to your seats because it's only $40,000 to $60,000. And we'll have an instructions on how to do a drop kick are not included.
So, hey, by the way, is that too much for your wallet or your waistline? I've seen Kirk's waistline. Then how about going formal with Kirk's TOS dress uniform tunic? You can get the uniform, but not all the medals. You have to earn those. That means it's a steal. An auction estimate of about $25,000 to $35,000.
And sure you say, but what if I want to buy something for myself and my friends?
Oh, well, we friends, it's a we gift.
Cough it up.
Yeah, that's right. It's a we. Yeah, it's getting very weird. Weird here. Well, fear not. You can bid on this set of items: the TOS Mirror Universe uniforms for Kirk, Spock, Sulu, and Uhura, Agonizer's knives and evil goatee not included.
Oh,
they have a combined auction. I know, but they have a combined auction estimate of just $102,000 to $150,000.
Quick, let me go ask my wife. Hold on.
Okay,
I got some stock options. He won't be back. Flip.
He won't be back.
This podcast is not good for you, Craig.
I know, right?
To fill out your Christmas list, you can check out the auction, which will take place on Tuesday, December 17th. We'll have a link to the entire catalog in the show notes for episode 55 over at thetopicistrek.com. And yes, the auction will take online real-time bids from qualified buyers. Qualified. That includes none of us.
No.
And also, yes, we'd love to have that Klingon Disruptor sent to us as a gift. So find a link in the show note to the Azirian Collection Auction. There is some really cool stuff in there, and there's some stuff that looks like it hasn't aged all that well.
Yeah. So that's how you know it's authentic. Because
it's been sitting in a box in a warehouse for 50 years.
Mm.
Although, we talk about things that don't look authentic, and I just want to do a follow-up. If you recall a couple of episodes ago, we talked about that captain's chair.
The one from the amusement park or whatever it was?
Yeah. And it was going up for auction, and we really couldn't figure out why it existed, but we kind of backtracked about it came from one of the properties owned by Cedar Fair.
Yeah.
Well, that auction is over. It sold for $2,000.
Someone's sleeping on the couch tonight.
I mean, it's not going for the astronomical prices of the type of things we just talked about. However, keep something in mind. It's not an original prop.
Right.
It was made by Cedar Fair for Cedar Fair. It
had that confusing insignia on the back.
It had an Elcars display on it that one of the things on it was the word Elcars. Yeah. You know, it seems a little unnecessary to have that as a command. I don't know. But some lucky person got it for $2,000. And it was none of us, in case you're wondering.
Lucky person. I like
that was the starting bid, wasn't it?
No, I think we saw it was in the 400, 450 range.
I don't know. I don't know where you put that thing. In a yard sale, perhaps. Who knows? Anyway, those are the stories we're going to be talking about, but you're saying, I want more. I want more news headlines. Well,
we can accommodate. Be careful what
you ask for. Yeah, because we can accommodate those needs if you go to the show notes for episode 55 over at thetopicistrek.com. We have links to not one, not 10, not 20, not just 30, but 33 more stories that we didn't have time to cover. You can find more holiday gifts. You can find a recipe for Romulan ale. You can find out about the award that William Shatner has been awarded in Canada. You can find
books.
All these things. There's books. There's stories about things you can get for your Samsung phone that are Trek related. Everything is over there. All you have to do is go and click on the links.
Wait, what? I'm going to check that out.
No, I'm not starting the show.
Okay,
you want to go to the show notes for episode 55 I know you have them in front of you, but I want you to go over to the site as well, because that's traffic to the site.
Oh, you wait till I post it, and then I can go back.
That's right. Don't look at it until you finish posting it.
Okay.
All right. It's time to close up Subspace Chatter, much to Charlie's delight. So let's press this button here. Oh, I meant to press this one over here. Yeah, that's better. Whoopsie.
Hey, Scotty, Marcus one down, minus.
Takes care of the Tholians.
All right. Well, it's time to head out on our main mission, but we need to preface our main mission with a spoiler alert. So can we have our no expenses spared special alert sound?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
How long
alert.
Is this thing, Craig?
Spoiler alert.
I don't know.
20
that long. 20 minutes.
No, it's like the 8 hours of warp engine noise.
That's right. It's on a continuous loop.
24 hours of spoiler alert.
There are four lights. There are four lights. All right. Now that we've prefaced that, we are going to be talking about book one, chapter one, part one of the Picard Countdown comic book series that has come out. If you recall, before Star Trek 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness, there were comics that had really backstory that you didn't have to know before the movie came out, but it was helpful to have. And I think especially for Star Trek 2009, because you have all the backstory about the supernova, you get to really understand more about this conflict between Nero and Spock, that he really, that they're friends before this whole incident happens, and things happen that he feels betrayed by Spock. And so it's helpful to have that information. Well, it's also kind of a curse in one way, and we'll talk about that as we get talking about it. So in this first part here, I don't want to be like the sites that I've gone to, some sites where they've done reviews of it, and the review is, here's the entire plot of the comic book showing you pictures of every single panel, and now you should go out and buy it.
Yeah.
Why? So hopefully you've bought the comic or had a chance. Both Craig and I believe got the electronic version of it. I know that's how I purchased it. You also got it online, Craig?
Yeah, actually, I think I mentioned it to you guys, but I saw a coupon, not a coupon, it was like an email saying that Google Books would give you $3 off for an ebook. So I went, okay, you know what, I'll spring for that. So I had a couple of bucks in my Google account anyway, so I basically got the comic for like $2.
So. Yeah, and I got it on Amazon through Kindle. I don't think I got that email, but because on some packages I had selected, ship all the stuff later or all at once, whatever, they give you credit, and I could use those credits to go towards the Kindle book. So I did it that way. So you can save. You can save on that, so you can save money for buying all those props we talked about earlier. A couple of dollars here and there add up to the $40,000 you need to bid on some of those other items. But I will say up front that the comic is written by Kirsten Bayer, who has written Voyager novels, and she's also a staff writer on both Discovery and Picard. And Mike Johnson, who's written several Star Trek comics, he also did the writing for the Countdown to Darkness comic that we talked about. And the art is by Angel Hernandez on that. So those are your credits. There's also credits for the colorist and the inker and so forth for the book, but you can check those when you get the book. Now, again, this is the 3-part story, so we're only getting up to a cliffhanger in this thing.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember how long we have to wait. It obviously all comes out before Picard premieres on the 23rd of next month, so it's not going to be that long before these other 2 parts get released, but you get a cliffhanger. And I like the story. I had some feelings like I knew where it was headed when we get to the cliffhanger. But I also thought it was interesting because it turns out that Picard has not been out of Starfleet all that long. It's some of these cases of, I'm trying to understand the timeline enough that we're talking about a year from the time that the story does start off with a couple of Romulans working at Chateau Picard.
And then we'll go back. Three stars on the Starfleet flag.
Oh, but we don't see the Starfleet flag. But
yeah,
what happens at that point is we flash back a year. And I'm trying to understand the timeline. Okay, so it's a year between that first scene of the Romulans at the vineyard, and when the incidents take place. Presumably in that year is when the incident happens that Picard decides to leave Starfleet. And I'm trying to figure out, did you get a sense, Craig? And again, because timey-wimey and somebody needs to show me a chart and then I feel much better about it. Now we're talking, do you get the impression that it's only been a year from the ending of this, from the flashback to when the Picard series is going to happen? Or is there another gap that I'm not figuring out there?
Well, at the beginning of the book, there's some Romulans there, and they're at the vineyard, as you mentioned. And then after that, it says 1 year before. So when did that happen? I don't know. When did they start? When did the actual book start? I don't know. However, it goes a year beyond before that, we go back and talk about Picard's mission. So I don't know what the actual, I mean, they show Earth. It says 2386 at the top. I don't know when, how that steps in with the Picard series. What is it? Do you remember what year it's supposed to take place?
I'm a bad host and didn't do that research. So
okay,
so offhand, I do not know.
Yeah, so I don't know how far back we're talking, but I can't imagine it's too far. I'm thinking probably 5 or 6 years. I'm just taking a stab at that. So, but I had the same thing idea with you. I was like, okay, he's still in Starfleet. So, and people had time to leave the Enterprise and go different places and get secure in their jobs. So I figured,
because in the story, Riker and, Troy are on the Titan. Yes. So they're still in Starfleet in this back 1 year from the very first scene at the vineyard. I'm scrambling here trying to see if I can find the date. But there's so many dates in this thing. I can't figure out which one. So I'm going to assume that it's possible that that vineyard scene, then there's another gap. Maybe we have to fast forward a few more years past that point to when we get to when the Picard series begins, because I can't think that not only does he leave Starfleet, but everybody goes off and all these other things are happening and we jump right into the story at that point. So
yeah.
I'm assuming that there's more of a gap past there.
That's what I was getting at was, obviously the Enterprise is not his anymore. So he had time for that to transition. Of course, Geordi and everybody else has gone off in different jobs. And, you know, we knew Will and, Deanna were going to the Titan, so at the end of Nemesis. So I imagine it's probably, well, what was it, about 20 years after? Yeah, 20 years after Nemesis. So there's been plenty of time for things to happen since then.
Okay. All right. So the thing I was also mentioning, I said, you know, sometimes it can be a blessing and a curse between the different countdown books, because I went and I found my copy of the countdown book for Star Trek 2009, mm-hmm. where the incident of the supernova happens as well, and Romulus gets destroyed. So that is the same between what we're going to be dealing with now and what was in the story there. However, a lot of the details are a lot different. First off, the Romulans are told, Spock warns the Romulan Council about this impending disaster. And they say, oh, well, we've been studying that as well, and we don't think it's a threat, blah, 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 blah. Thank you for letting us know, but, you know, we're not going to pay attention to that.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by. Bye-bye.
Yeah, and by the time they react to it, there's no time to react. So this idea of having these 4 years or whatever to prepare for this thing, this coordinated effort between the Federation and the Romulan Empire, that's different. Also, it's different that in the Star Trek 2009 countdown, Picard is an ambassador, and Data is the captain of the Enterprise. I don't think we see Riker and Troy. And Geordi is working for the Federation. He is designing ships, but he's certainly not in charge of a fleet on, you know, Planitia building this entire armada of ships. So you have those two things. And I wonder, are the comics considered as much canon anyway as what is shown on screen? Because I always had this feeling there was this kind of a disconnect that if it's not something that you see with the actual live actors or maybe perhaps soon in, and although so far at the moment, animated is also questionable about canon to some people. Do you not worry too much about that stuff? Is that just kind of all, it's backstory, but you know, the nuts and bolts are the same.
No, I believe it is canon. As much as the comic books were canon to 2009 Star Trek, this is too. This is, you know, part of the story. I mean, they put it out here for a reason, and I can imagine it would be like, you know, it's kind of, oh, take it as you will.
Because that means then there are two prime timeline stories going here that completely conflict with one another, except for the major detail of the supernova destroying Romulus. And so I found that interesting. I also found it interesting that we are supposed to, at the beginning, I think, have pity on the Romulans. Okay, they have to be relocated from their home world, and their entire civilization is in all this disruption, and, you know, where they're going to go, and they're clearly not welcome on Earth, even though some of them are there. And you go, okay, I get where this story's going. And then a curveball gets thrown at you toward the end of the part one of the comic, where you go, well, I don't know, maybe they're not so much, you know, the people we should have all the sympathy for.
Oh yeah. You know? Well, Romulans will always be Romulans.
And I found that kind of I don't know if that's going to play into things. I have a suspicion that what Picard discovers on the planet that he has to go to help rescue to evacuate some Romulans from a planet that he didn't know existed because the Romulans had kept it from everybody. What he finds on that planet, I think that is going to be one of the triggers that drives him from Starfleet. I just have a feeling that Starfleet and the Federation are going to tell him to do one thing, and he's going to want to do the other thing.
Yeah. And then the Romulans are pulling him another way.
So we're getting a lot of setup.
Is this going to be brought out in the show, or is this going to be brought out in the comics before the show starts?
Well, that's what I've got a feeling that the comics will tell the entire story of what is being set up in the first part. How much they're going to go into this in the series is the question. They have to address as to why he left Starfleet, because all the trailers are talking about an incident that made him leave Starfleet.
I have a feeling that the first, there's three issues, right? So I think the first two leading up to the Picard show is going to give you enough information where you go, okay, now I want the rest of it, and then you're going to watch the show, and then they can spill the beans on the rest of the this prequel.
Oh, all right.
You know, so then you, so I think this is to, it's coming out, the last part is coming out after the beginning of the show, specifically because they don't want to spoil something. But after it comes out, then you go, oh, and then you watch, you read the second episode, and you go, oh, I see. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think okay. I can see that happening. There are some little, oh, one thing I thought was interesting, and I said, wow, this has never happened before. I was trying to find out, there are a couple of things in the comic that I wanted to learn a little bit more about or get some clarification on. And I went to Memory Alpha. And yeah. None of the things I was looking for regarding names and locations in this comic were found. It's like there were no entries for those yet. And usually Memory Alpha is, so I blame Thanksgiving, I guess, that people were preoccupied with actually having a life and didn't get a chance to do this. But darn it, the one time out of the 20,000 times that I've needed that site.
Memory Alpha!
I even went over to Memory Beta. I mean,
unless it's, unless it's case. Purposely being, you know, whoever's maintaining that is just putting a block on that content for good reason.
Well, no, I mean, I was looking for.
Well, Memory Alpha is kind of, it's like Wikipedia. You know, people just go in and fill it out. There's probably not that much information.
There's not a moderation process to it?
I imagine there is.
Wikipedia, I guess. I don't know.
But it not having the information in there is kind of like if an episode of Discovery came out and they said, well, not everyone's seen it yet, so we're not going to put that information up. I mean, as soon as they know enough to put up, they just put it up. And these things that I'm looking for would be something where, yeah, there might be an entry and it's really, really generic and it will be filled in much more later, but there was just nothing there at all. Mm. So I went to look for something like the planet that they go to just to see, all right, well, is that there? And even that wasn't there yet. So I thought that was interesting. It'll probably show up this evening now that we're done recording.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
The ship that Picard is the captain on, he's an admiral, but he's the captain of that ship, I guess. Ship, yeah, he's captaining the ship. Thank you. The Verity is the design of the ship is the same as the design of Enterprise F in Star Trek Online. And so this is a kind of an acknowledgement.
Ship. It's an Odyssey class, I believe, is what it is. Yeah.
It's the bridge itself is massive. They have a shot of Picard looking at the view screen. And it's like, okay, so do people talk on that view screen and then like 20 minutes later you hear what they said where you're standing on the bridge? It's just like this massive
the top
open space.
View of the ship, the lines are very similar to Voyager. But the side view and the bottom view are not. It's almost like a pregnant Voyager. It's got a much larger, I don't know, lower deck section.
And I had not in my bumbling around with Star Trek Online, I had not encountered Enterprise F, so I was not familiar with that design of ship. But you know, those who play the game clearly said, "Yay, validation! Look, it's an actual class of ship."
I like it though. I liked the E, and this one takes a lot from design cues from that, and I liked the F as well. This is good.
Some of the characters in the comic book, I don't know if we're going to see them in the series, which is one of the things I was trying to look up. I do know that one of them, and that is Picard's first officer in this, it's Rafi Musiker. I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the emphasis might be on the wrong syllable.
Yeah.
She's in this, and we see her in the trailers for Picard, but she's the one who has the little trailer type thing in the middle of Vasquez Rock that Picard goes to visit her.
Oh, okay. Yep.
This these two must have a history that goes back pretty far, though, because she comes into Picard's ready room and just calls him JL.
Yeah.
And he kind of calls her out and he says, "You're never going to let me live that down and call me anything else, are you?" And she says, "No, and I think you kind of like it." He goes, "Well, I don't know about that, but..." So I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's pretty informal to just refer the captain as JL.
Around the other crew members.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she was walking into his ready room and there's no one else there,
The one panel they showed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how she refers to him when they're on the bridge. I'm assuming she would say Captain or
Captain
Admiral.
JL.
Yeah, Captain JL. Those are a few things. I don't know. What about you, Craig? Are the things that leapt out at you about the story?
I was just trying to get used to, like you said, a different first officer with him. I did not like the uniforms 100%, but maybe I'm just not used to them. But the story itself is great. I think it's this typical Star Trek kind of thing where they think you're doing one thing and then, there's a curveball gets thrown at them and they've got a moral quandary going on, trying to figure out how they're going to handle it. So I think it's going to be a pretty good story from what I'm seeing so far. And I like the places where everybody's at. And I think you mentioned that you thought in the prequel comments, I think you were talking about, you said Data was on the Enterprise. Well, now this is the case here is we're not 100% sure who was on the Enterprise.
Right.
Yeah. So... which is kind of interesting too. So leave us hanging with that a little bit. I think this is a good story and a good lead in. I'm ready to read issue two.
Yeah. I think there was one thing that leapt out at me that I'm thinking we're going to hear this phrase, well, probably later in the comics, but I got a feeling it was just like tossed in there because we're going to hear this phrase in the actual series at some point. It's Massacre says, "Say it with me, JL, one impossible mission at a time."
Yeah.
I'm going, I got a feeling we're going to hear that one later on again.
Yeah,
it just kind of leapt out at me.
And that other one where he says, "I got a bad feeling about this."
Wait a minute. Did I miss that part? Hold on a second.
Nice try.
Did not see that one. Well, you got a different version of the comic, obviously, than I got.
The Canadian version.
I downloaded the UK version or something, yeah.
And we're not keeping Chuck out of the conversation. Chuck is like possibly some of you. He has not had a chance to read the comic yet.
Not yet.
Well, now we've hopefully not spoiled it for you because we tried to be vague about a lot of things that are going on.
I did look over the links that are in the show notes over at thetopicistrek.com. So there is information. Even if you haven't subscribed or read the comment, there are a lot of follow-up articles that look into that I found very enlightening.
And hopefully one of them will give me a timeline because that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that timeline about what's going on.
It's in issue 3.
Ah, thank you so much. Well, they have recently StarTrek.com put up a video, like it wasn't interactive, but it was a video of the Star Trek timeline and it's Star Trek's interaction within history.
Yeah.
And I think because they've gone there, I think it starts at the Big Bang because Q, I think it's Janeway, I think, to the Big Bang. So it starts at the Big Bang. It's pretty much as far back as I think we're going to be able to go. And take things all the way out through. I don't think it goes to the next season of Discovery's portion, because then you'd have to fill in the entire gap of things that have fallen between.
Where do you sit to observe the Big Bang? You can't sit outside the universe.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Well, there are some theories that say there wasn't even space or time before the Big Bang. So how are you?
Right.
Well, Q, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I can't hide behind that one.
Yeah, right.
Well, you can ask John DeLancey how that all, or Kate Mulgrew, how that all worked out.
When we get
out
to the cruise, we'll ask.
Exactly. Excuse me, I have a question about Big Bang. Yes, it was a lovely comedy series. Thank you very much. Next question.
Yeah. So I'm hoping, Sheldon. Oh, I love him.
Yeah. I'm hoping that at some point there's one of those type of things for what's happening here. It's just made for me. I'm the one that needs it. Everybody else is probably yelling at their listening devices going, it's clear as day how this all works out. Here's the timeline. Okay. Just me. But on that note, it's about time to come back from our vague main mission. Okay. And we have none of the listeners back who we gave the spoiler alert to because they just must have stopped listening. So I'm just talking to you. You, listener, you are the one who stayed for our Warp Speed Round.
The one who didn't fall asleep from 4 hours.
That's right.
Asleep.
Yeah.
That's right. So last time around on our Warp Speed Roundtable, we asked, what is your personal opinion? Is Star Trek the animated series canon or not? And that brings up that whole issue again that I was referring to about, well, what is canon, what isn't? And but I think we kind of agreed that the animated series was canon. So we're claiming all this stuff as canon and we decide, we make the laws. This time around, I want to ask each of you, we talked about the Star Trek, well, it's not a Star Trek auction, but there's lots of Star Trek things in it. We talked about some of the things that you could get from the latest Profiles in History auction. However, the catalog, which we again have a link to, has 11 pages of Star Trek items for auction that you can bid on. Without going into every single thing that's in the auction, I want to ask each of you, if you could bid on one of the items Star Trek related in that auction, what would it be? And I'm going to start things off. I'll kick things off this time around. Okay. They have a security guard helmet from Star Trek, the motion picture. Those things that look like it's an old timey football helmet. Yes. I want that because it's the, you know, when I saw the movie, I was like, that is the silliest. What in the world is brown? It looks uncomfortable. Like, you know, are all the security guards like kind of sweating all the time? It's just, and it's got the big Delta shield in the middle of it. I don't think you saw them in any other of the movies. I may be wrong about that, but it's like, I think it's one of those things that the costume designers for the second movie looked at and went, yeah, we're not, no, thanks. We don't need that. We're not going to use that. No, please put that away someplace.
It does look.
It's repurposed from the Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I think it looks like one of those, like you said, one of those football helmets from like the 20s or the, you know, early, when they, like a leather helmets.
It's Army versus Navy, and it's a royal battle. I mean, a battle royale.
I think that they actually get, you know, audible laughs when we were in the theater. Go, what is that thing? So I want that. That's what I would bid on. Hey, let's go next.
I could see you wearing that at Dragon Con.
I was going to say, cosplay that and see who figures it out.
That's right. No one will understand what that is.
I'm security guy number two.
Oh, I loved you in whatever that thing was you were in. All right, let's go next to Craig.
Emphasis on the number two.
Well, there's actually two things I considered. One was both sets of Spock's ears. There's like I think there was like two sets of ears in here.
You got two sets of ears. You can put them on. I didn't just.
Just in case I want to go with 4 years. The one thing I think I would love to bid on, if money was not an object, was these 81 scripts from the original series.
Mm.
I think that would be fun to go back and read and see what was actually different from the episodes.
And I forget, are those autographed or are they just pretty much table read and production?
Some of them are, it looks like. I see DeForest Kelly on the cover of one.
And what's the price on those?
It was like 15 to 20 grand.
And Clinton, how much was your football helmet?
Hopefully no more than $5.
Six to eight hundred. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, mine is almost within the range that I could actually bid on the thing. So I won't.
Well,
but I could.
I wouldn't mind. Seriously, I think it'd be fun to have those scripts.
Especially if they're early.
The description on the script. We might get more details out of that.
All right. So an extraordinary assemblage of scripts from the original series, missing only three episodes, Where No Man Has Gone Before, I, Mud, and The Cloud Minders. Varying drafts, some with all white pages and others, and other multicolored versions.
Well, so the revisions, so just if people aren't aware, what that means is a completely white script, that's the beginning script. As the script changes through production, they take out a page and they put in a new page, but they assign it a color. So like they print it on colored paper. So you go, these are the blue, does everybody have the blue pages for scene three, page six? No, I've still got the pink one. Okay, we need somebody to get them the blue. So that's what that means.
Now we have Google Docs. We can just update pages. Everybody gets the changes. Multicolored reversions. Many scripts bear a production or cast member's name written on the cover with a rubber stamped number in the upper right. Others bear notations and handwriting corrections on wrappers and interior. Of particular note, there are two versions of the script for the alternate factor, one with numerous typewritten pages with handwritten notes and supplemented with production photocopies. Many are handwritten notations. The other script is Gene Kuhn's script with the original wrappers, unbranded, containing numerous handwritten notations and amendments, both by writer DC Fontana and producer Bob Justman. The Space Seed is signed on the cover by William Shatner and Ricardo Montalban. Look at there. That would be a win in my book right there. Episodes with additional copies. The Alternate Factor, Spectre of the Gun, and That Which Survives, two additional. Some scripts bear varying reproduction wrappers. A few have missing wrappers, varying condition with production wear and handling, and scattered staining, I guess, like coffee stains, maybe cigarette, which may include occasional tearing of braids. Some have missing braids. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to view the exceptional near complete original series script in person. Well, I'll book my flight.
There you go.
Anyway, I thought I think out of all of these, this probably has the most character of all the items.
Right. Especially if it's one that did have revisions to it, but you're getting the copy that never got the revisions, you get to see what pretty much as close as to what the original draft was going to be on it.
Yeah. And you see William Shatner, Carter Montalban sign there. I see one of the covers says DeForest Kelly. It looks like his signature.
Cool. All right. That's our picks. What about you, Chuck?
Oh, as tempting as the entire Mirror Universe collection would be. I'm going for item number 52, the Klingon Disruptor from Star Trek, the original series. Vintage original static prop gun constructed of cast resin grip and body with tooled aluminium three-stage barrel and spindle scope sight affixed. Foil tape applied for accents in the areas and coffin-shaped waffle textured panels affixed to either side, spelled with a 43 in there like they're printing in leet speak or something.
Yeah.
Of the unique barrel. Expertly studio assembled and finished with the dove gray painted body and grip. The static prop weapon measures approximately 13 by 7 by 3 inches. This and other Klingon disruptors first appeared as an sonic disruptor seen in TOS episode 23. A Taste of Armageddon. Subsequently, when the Klingon culture was introduced in episode 26, Aaron of Mercy, the prop makers repurposed the original disruptor with modifications and innovations, resulting in this Klingon disruptor. This disruptor was from the collection of Star Trek, the motion picture property. Master Dick Rubin, who had access to this original series prop for reference in making the Klingon disruptor for Star Trek Phase 2, which of course became Star Trek, the motion picture. exhibiting minor age and production handling in vintage fine condition. So this is lot number 424, estimated range of $25,000
to $35,000. Ooh, a bit more out of the normal person's range for that one. But it does look in very good shape. I mean, they say there's wear on it. Obviously, the photo can't necessarily show everything that you would see with your eye, but it does look in very good shape.
And you said, which one was that you chose, Chuck?
The Disruptor, the Klingon Disruptor, item number 52.
Oh, 52.
What I get a kick out of is if you look at the end of the barrel, it almost looks like Uhura's earpiece.
It kind of does. Yeah. A smaller version of it.
Yeah, just give me her earpiece here.
And then they like that stack cylinder style.
They do. And if you look at the back, right above the handle, it looks like a regular pistol hammer on the right above where the handle is.
Completely pointless.
So,
yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So there are other things in there, like other things from Star Trek: The Motion Picture. There's a Tribble, all sorts of things that feel free to bid on those. And like we said, we'll take the Disruptor if you want to send it along to us. That will be fine.
Yeah, we're not above donations.
Absolutely not. But it is about that time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
Already?
Already. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. See, no ding for that. And you can also find me, Comedy Forecast, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, MeWe, the local deli. I don't know, wherever you look for me, I'm there someplace, one place or another. And
he's everywhere.
I'm everywhere. Who speaks for you guys this week?
I speak for us. We need some reverb on that.
I speak for the users.
I speak for the programs, I guess. You can find us, Technorama Podcast, over at chuckchat.com. Or if you want to find all the YouTube and Twitter stuff as well, just Google or put into your favorite search engine, Technorama Podcast, and you can find that. We do our lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek in about 10 minutes.
He doesn't mean the show is 10 minutes. He means we're finish
recording in 10 minutes from now.
Their next show. So don't get confused by that. Context is everything. All right.
It's about time. My pajamas, I'll never know.
Let's hit the theme.
Oh, already? Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I think I might have had the first one underneath that. There.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe. And why is this song already over? And I'm going to keep going. We got to keep moving along here. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt. They have no red shirts up for auction, though. Darn it.